ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast on with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Monday. The Bazball era in Test cricket is officially over. Oh, we got a whole lot to chop up. Ed Cowan is in Sydney. Hello, Teddy.
Corb, happy Monday. I mean, it's a happy Monday when you wake up to the news, isn't it?
What? That English cricket's in turmoil again?
I've got one request.
Yes.
Before we get into it, I want 1 hour of your full attention.
That's what I give you every week.
You were Corby everywhere. Yes, I saw you on Offsiders.
Yes.
And you called a game of football.
Yep.
So I'm happy to take the lead, but. Sweet. I'm just asking for full Corbin, 1 hour on a Monday.
It was pretty easy to jump straight into the cricket world when I got home last night and saw the news that Brendan McCullum is no longer the coach of England's red ball team. He will continue to lead the white ball sides. The process to recruit a new coach is already underway. McCullum was quoted as saying, "Of course, I'm gutted not to be continuing, but I respect the decision." They are now looking for a new test captain and a new test coach less than a year out from the 2027 Ashes series. They do have 10 test matches in that time. Brendan McCullum oversaw a team which has now lost 7 of their last 9 test matches. 3 months on from the failed Ashes campaign after they originally said at the time that the easy option would be to sack the coach. After that tour of Australia, 3 test matches on, a 2-1 series loss at home to New Zealand. And now Richard Gould, the ECB CEO, says the time is right. Oh, I don't even, well, there's so many angles we can attack this from. But first of all, what's your initial thoughts when you see that news come through?
Well, part of me was surprised, but at the same time, for anyone that's listened to this podcast for any period of time, you know, this is a conversation that's been ongoing for some time. Because you talk to 2 wins of their last 9, and so if you drag that short-term view out a little bit, I think he, you know, had 27 test wins as coach, you know, over, what was it, 49 tests with only 2 draws. So, yeah, he was striking above 500, but it's not a record that you can really stand behind. And this is a results-based business, without a doubt. And of course, you get dragged into the short-term conversation, only winning 2 of your last 9 tests, and it doesn't look all that pretty. And so I'm not surprised. I guess what I am surprised is the timing on a few fronts. One is, you know, that they had this opportunity after the Ashes. What has changed? Yes, they lost to New Zealand, but fundamentally, from a team sense and a style of play, they knew what they were getting. And so, you know, I'm a little confused by that. And then I kind of zoom out a little bit and I have a little bit of a thought experiment, and that is, where would England cricket be without Bazball? And if you turn the clocks back, and we all have a little bit of a bias to what's happened in the last couple of years, it was an England team that really had no hope. They had, you know, Broad and Anderson about to retire. You know, Joe Root was struggling in many senses. They didn't really have any middle order batting options coming through. And they really had nowhere to go. They were backs against the wall. And so while the results haven't been there, I actually think, you know, for a disruptor coach, he's done his job. And this could be a bit of a contrarian take, but he's uncovered some excellent talent. He's given a whole range of players faith that, you know, they can contribute at international level, like a Ben Duckett. And so I think the time is right for him to hand over the reins and let someone else shape this team, because I think what he's been able to do with a little, you know, with some stronger guardrails on the field, not off the field, we can come to the off-field guardrails in a second, but at least there's some hope for England cricket in terms of having unearthed some decent talent, because without this little era of Brendan McCullum, I actually fear that we could have really lost them for many, many years.
Unfortunately, we see this very similar. I didn't think you were going to take that particular take. And I've seen a bit of analysis today around, it almost like they're grading English cricket and this version of English cricket by the same standards that we hold, you know, Australia and India to, which is, you know, roll up to global tournaments, win, be the best team in the world. You got to remember where England came from, and as you say about, you know, took over the team. They won 10 of their first 11 Test matches, and completely breathed life into this program that really had none. So I don't know. I feel like now that it's finally over, and it had gone past its expiration date, sure, that you kind of need to look back and realise that it's kind of, I mean, very different approaches and everything else. But it was like the Justin Langer era in Australian cricket, that it sort of. It felt like that the time was over for him to be the senior coach, and finally he departed. But it was almost like in that moment, rather than saying, oh, it's overdue, you actually had to appreciate, hey, Australian cricket really needed that at that particular stage, the same way that I think England needed something like the Bazball era. So, yeah, that they became interesting, that they became relevant again in Test cricket, because up until that point, it's hard to say that they were that. That they were a team that was pretty easy to roll over, and they were no hope away from home.
Yeah, and let's not gloss over the bad stuff either. This is a team that has lacked discipline, that has handed advantages to the opposition at key points in time when matches and series were on the line. Off the field, this is a team that certainly hasn't covered themselves in glory with. You know, many misdemeanors from the tour of New Zealand to Noosagate to you know, more recently in the UK. So that's not to say this is a team just to be celebrated, because or a coaching reign to be celebrated. It was just more of a reflection that without McCullum, these last two Ashes series would have not just been a fait accompli, but they would have been far less interesting.
Correct. But when were England that? Like, they had one series in like 2005 or whatever, and backed it up and beat an Australian team. Obviously, a couple of campaigns after that, and they were good at home. They've had one, really tour down here in most of our lifetimes to be able to be successful in these parts. It's not as if English cricket in the last 50 years has been regularly going to India or Australia and having tremendous success like that. That is an English cricket. So I sort of feel like as well, don't hold them to an unreasonable expectation. But I think it was a chapter worth pursuing. And to be honest, I'm not even as hot as everyone else about the fact that they stayed on, gave it another, good old college try, and had, three more test matches together, and the belief that, they can evolve and change and everything else. And clearly it was already lost at that particular stage. So they burned three test matches. They've got 10 now between, this point and the start of next Ashes series. So if there was a time to change, that this was probably the last possible point that you could change before next year's Ashes series, 10 test matches to try and get it together. Really, we're talking about at the end of the day, the difference between 10 and 13. And ultimately the captain and the coach depart at the end of a home series, and that they've really lost three test matches against New Zealand, which is all they've lost by pushing on.
The other thought that comes to mind that probably hasn't been covered in some really great reporting is, I think Bazball pushed Australia to a new place with their cricket. I think just the way Test cricket has been played, and particularly by England, has given players like a Travis Head permission to indulge a little bit more. Would the Australian selectors have selected Sam Constance on Boxing Day, for instance, against India, if Bazball never exists? I know we're running kind of hypothetical examples, but I think it's pushed a lot of thinking as to what does the modern game actually mean? How is it to be played? And how does that start flowing through to how the Australian team and other teams have played? So there's a bigger impact than simply wins and losses in the England column. And I do think it's actually brought a different flavour to a lot of different cricket teams, of which probably the Australian team's been a beneficiary as well.
Yep. And the game has to evolve naturally in 2026. It can't be, what it was in 2002 or whatever it turns out to be. I mean, they did get lost in it though, didn't they? I mean, and we've spoken about that so many times in the past, that ultimately I think where they fell down, and the whole idea of, and we talk about this so much, about removing the anxiety from sport, and their North Star at a certain point was no longer winning test matches. And when that became, that the winning and losing didn't matter, all of a sudden they found themselves in this doom loop that they couldn't get out of. Bazball didn't evolve, and ultimately it's ended the way that it has.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because I think the stated mission to start with was to produce, an attacking brand of cricket that allowed a pretty mediocre group of cricketers to flourish.
Yeah.
And it did that to start with. And then it kind of, as you kind of said, the Kool-Aid got too sweet on them and they started believing their own BS, and that flowed through to all the little bits that we've heard over the last couple of years of nothing negative being allowed to say in the change room, or, you know, players leading the way as to how they want to prepare.
Moral victory.
You can name a whole heap of data points. And so it kind of got off the original purpose, you know, from the outside in. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting case study in many respects, because if you can grab a little bit of that magic of positivity, of fearlessness, of being able to take a game away, and you put that in with a little bit more discipline and a little bit more match awareness, you probably have a bloody good cricket team.
Mm. That gets me to what was going to be my next question as to whether it's a good job. So he leaves without a series victory against either Australia or India, so either of England's chief rivals. 27 wins, 20 losses, 2 draws, but very few wins in the last 10. Is it a good job for prospective coaches out there to lead England's test team?
Well, it feels like a little bit of a poison chalice, but at the same time, you've got this great foundation to kind of build upon. You've uncovered some talent. Duckett, Brooke, Archer's back playing Test cricket. I don't think they've got the best out of him. They've found some fast bowlers at least. There's been a bit of a rejuvenation. So it really depends on whether they want to continue down this path with a little bit more discipline, or they want to go back and blow the whole thing up,
yeah,
and say, let's start again.
What would you do from afar?
I think I would go to a modern coach. So just hear me out for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear these rumblings, oh, maybe Andy Flower's the answer, you know, some old-fashioned discipline, or, you know, maybe Justin Langer, or, you know, someone who can really create that hard-nosed environment. I don't think that's the answer. I think more in the Andrew McDonald vein, a modern coach who understands this group of players but can also create enough those guardrails or bumper bars for them to thrive. And
do they have to be English?
I think it would be beneficial for them to be English. And so I just think it always sets that person up on a false footing if they're not.
Mm.
And so
you're an outsider from day one, aren't you? Like,
yeah,
you're trying to win everyone.
You are.
Yep. The way these things work too is it's often, you know, I think if we did a study through the history of cricket, it would go overseas, mm, local. That it's pretty rare that an overseas coach is replaced by another overseas coach. So I think in this scenario, given they've just come out of McCullum, I think if I was a betting man, I'd be leaning towards an English coach.
Yeah. Mm. And you know, maybe we can have a think as who that could be. But and then you've got, do they come through the county system and like it's a Peter Moores type, or is it a total outlier and they go, hey, Kevin Peterson, do you want to coach the England team?
That's you know, like I haven't heard
someone
yet.
Who I oh, know, but just someone who hasn't coached.
Yeah,
like you can have the non-coach coach, and that was kind of Brendan McCullum.
Yep.
Or you can have someone who's actually invested in their own pathway as a coach, so very confident around that.
So the name that's going to keep coming up and the sexy name brand coach is clearly Andrew Flintoff, who has worked with the underage programs. You sit on a board that's obviously just appointed him as the coach of the Sydney Thunder in the not too distant past and the BBL. So clearly he's an attractive prospect as a coach. Who knows if he even wants to do it or not? Plus he's got, you know, white ball roles around the world. His son is coming through the program, so I don't know whether that's something that would either be a magnet for him or also a reason for him to stay away. He's a name surely that's just going to be talked about more and more.
Yeah, for sure. But so I would put him in that second category of he's essentially coached 100 team. That's it. He's done a little bit of coaching around the England Lions,
yep,
but not a heap. And he's basically a franchise coach. And so, yes, he's an England legend. Yes, he's got a great cricket mind and his credentials are growing. But he hasn't proved himself over a county program. He doesn't exactly know what that could look like. You know, I've kind of been swayed a little bit having seen the Ivan Cleary, Nathan Cleary relationship at the Penrith Panthers that, yeah, I think it can work.
Seems to work. Yeah.
From a father-son point of view, I don't love it,
yeah.
Particularly in cricket. There's a few different nuances there, but you can kind of get around that.
The interesting figure, I mean, I agree with you, by the way, in terms of like the – well, Flowers had huge success in the IPL, so he's been there obviously coaching the Royal Challengers Bangalore, which is, yeah, as modern a program you could possibly get in terms of, you know, the newest version of the game and all the best players in the world come in one locker room, and he's been able to make it work at a franchise that, you know, previously had no success, or at least not the ultimate success. They played in a lot of playoff series and so on and so forth. But the authoritarian coach that, yeah, the Justin Langer style, and I guess that probably speaks to, I'd be fascinated to know what the conversations are being had by, you know, Richard Gould and also Rob Key, who, by the way, has now been endorsed and is going to stay on as the managing director of men's cricket. But about how much they think the cultural issues in the locker room are there, and the drinking culture that we've heard so much about. If they wanted to clean that up, you know, there's a guy that would come in, you know, straight away and be able to, you'd think would be able to sort that out in the short term. The other interesting figure in all of this is Marcus North, who of course is has spent so much time in and around WA cricket. He's a legend of the program there and a former captain. He's obviously the chief selector. So I imagine at some point someone's going to tap Marcus North on the shoulder and say, "Hey, what do you reckon, Marcus? What do you think we should do here?" And he'll be able to have some kind of input. So it's a very interesting appointment as to what kind of coach they're looking for, and then once they've worked that out, who the final name is.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you touched on this cultural question, and you know, before the news kind of broke, when I woke up this morning, I thought a lot of our conversation was going to be around this booze ban that they've put in place. And you know, culturally, I've never seen this top-down authoritarian kind of "you can't do this, you can't do that" ever work in professional sport.
Professional sport and, or professional cricket? Cricket feels like it's got a particularly Western Europe and countries that are
sure. I can only talk to cricket, so I'll keep it to cricket.
Yep.
But my point is, what does work is this player-driven here. What are we committing to as a team? Mm. And that may involve not going out and having 50 pints at every opportunity, but as soon as it becomes headmaster and school kid approach.
Yep.
With grown adults, it never works. I've never seen it work. And so the far better option is to say, here are our standards of the team. This is what we're subscribing to. And if you're outside those bounds, then there will be repercussions, yeah. And you're not welcome in this change room. And that needs to be player-led. And that needs a strong captain and a strong coach. And obviously you can see where the tension's been here, because McCullum and Stokes, I think, they've been very lackadaisical and laissez-faire as it relates to nocturnal activities. The ECB have, you know, basically said, that's not on and we're going to the other extreme. And now they're in a really hard place, because if you're a coach that doesn't necessarily believe in that, where do you get to? If it's coming from the ECB head of performance or the CEO or the chair saying, you know, we can't have another one of these articles, you know, what's wrong with the culture of the team? They have to empower the new coach and the new captain to set their own standards and actually have the toughness to enforce them.
Nick Holt also in the Telegraph reporting that Stokes wanted McCullum out post the Australian tour. So there was clearly tension there when they were down under, and we were hearing that. I mean, I covered the whole series that... and you could almost see it in the way that Stokes' batting approach changed as the series went on, where it was almost like this protest vote where, as everyone played their natural game in inverted commas and, you know, took to the bowling attacks of the Australians, it clearly wasn't working. Stokes was like, you know, at a strike rate of 20, I think, in Adelaide at one point. And he was basically just almost, as I said, like a protest vote in the way that he was going about it. So clearly there was tension there by the back end.
Ben Stokes took the time to get in, you know, and the same with Bethel in Sydney, actually just constructed an innings. That doesn't mean that you can't put pressure on the bowlers.
You mean play properly. Yeah. Just
in brackets,
test cricket.
Play properly. Yeah. You can still take your opportunity to put pressure on the bowlers, but not...
Look at Travis Head and these kind of guys. Yeah.
Yeah. in a manner that jeopardises the nature of the risk-reward balance, I guess.
So he comes in as a red ball coach. He doesn't have the white ball programs. Matthew Mott goes. He inherits the white ball programs. Now he leaves the red ball job but keeps the white ball. What do you make of that? I mean, the Champions Trophy, they went out in the group stage. They made the semi-final stage of the World Cup in March in the T20s. And now they're the number one T20 team in the world, having just swept India 4-0. There's an ODI series that begins on Tuesday. So he's still with English cricket, and he's still with the ECB, and he's the coach of the 50-over and the T20 teams. It's an interesting, you know, to be sacked by one program and yet still hold the keys in the other.
Yeah, it is an interesting dynamic, but I don't mind it because I quite like the England white ball setup and how they go about their business. And I think, obviously, naturally, this style of play lends itself to that. And the results, aside from in and out of World Cups, have been pretty strong. And you know, that series win over the world champions recently in the T20, you know, speaks volumes. Yeah. They have a lot of talent coming through this pathway, less so in five-day cricket. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a watch and see. And it is hard. I mean, most countries that split these roles end up struggling. There's too many competing interests, and so it'll be interesting. That's the big watch from here. And the other big watch, you know, just to throw a real Hail Mary,
yep,
is maybe Stokes isn't done now. Whoa. And we see him maybe not this summer, but, you know, take some time out because he's going back to play cricket for Durham.
Wow. So
he makes a little Ashes comeback.
Wow. So you're not ruling out a Stokes Ashes revival?
No, I think there's more to play out with the Stokes retirement, and I think as that emerges, you know, and some clarity is gained, it felt like it was almost a protest in the end, in many respects, to the system, to the coach, to a whole range of other aspects, and let's just see where that pans out. That's we'll see.
There's our social media clip for the day. Just on our little socials clip, if you had to sum up Brendan McCullum's reign in 5 words or less.
Oh, goodness. Wow. 5 words or less.
Yep.
I'll stick with five. I think a 5-word limit is good. Ultimately, failed to deliver results.
Ooh, I was going to say better than it was. I think he still leads.
I mean, that'd be a fun listen. I think maybe they can write in some haikus on yep. the reign of Brendan McCullum and Baseball.
There we go.
We can read a few out.
Let us know what do they say in the comments below or to the side, depending on what platform you're on. Two more quotes before we go. First of all, both from Russell Gould, the chief executive. So he backs in Rob Key to continue as the men's managing director. He said he's a significant leader in the organisation. If you'd said to me at the end of the Ashes, we'll be chatting in the middle of July and McCullum would be gone but Key stays, I would have thought, nah, there's no way the way it's going. McCullum's got this contract which takes him through to the Ashes and everything else. So I was shocked at that. And the one other one was, and I probably should have done this when we're talking about Andy Flower and the test job, where he said, look, we need to be progressive on these issues, when he was asked about the fact that could Flower continue on as the IPL coach and also coach the England test team at the same time. He said it's something we would certainly consider when it comes to, you know, the senior coach of the test team also holding franchise roles and roles in the IPL. What do you make of those?
Well, particularly on that last comment, I think it's pretty pragmatic because increasingly England aren't going to play test cricket in that IPL window. And I know they have in the past, but, you know, I think moving forward, that's going to be a pretty solid carved out window. And so to attract the best, you can't deny them the opportunity to coach in the Premier setup, not just from the monetary side of things, because you're well remunerated as the head coach of the England test team. But just the prestige, the cachet, et cetera, you want to be where the best are. And so I can kind of see that working in the future of being the England test coach and an IPL coach.
Well, if the pressures are there for the players, you think they're going to be there for the best coaches too, aren't they?
For sure.
Yeah. And Rob Key?
I mean, it's no secret Rob Key and Brendan McCullum are very firm friends. Mm. And I never thought that McCullum and Key wouldn't go together. And so it's interesting that I think if McCullum wasn't doing the white ball cricket, I think we would have seen maybe a different outcome here.
The last one is that the timing. So Alex Hartley was critical of this and the fact that, yeah, the only ever women's test match that we've had at Lord's is being played currently. I couldn't believe that there'd never been a women's test match at the home of cricket before now. And this announcement comes out on essentially day three of the match. Now, there was, I think Tom Morris broke the news from down here in Australia on what had happened. There were then, you know, reports coming back saying, hey, there was an embargo that was put out, and you can very clearly see how this has happened. Tom wasn't actually on the embargo list. News comes out. Ultimately, we learn that that Brendan McCullum is no longer the coach of the Red Bull team. Did you have any issue in the way that this came about? Apparently, he was told on Sunday morning, so before England's last T20 game, and then essentially the news breaks. What breaks later that day?
It's pretty hard, having seen how these things play out, as soon as there's any kind of leak, and geez, I'd love to see the bucket that Tom Morris catches all his leaks from. It'd have some cracks in it, that's for sure. But as soon as it's out, it's out. And so the news cycle doesn't wait for anyone. And so, I get the point that Alex was trying to make. In an ideal world, that wouldn't happen. To some degree, but when you're the major news story of the day, the news waits for no one.
Yeah, the embargo was a good idea in theory. Where what the embargo almost does for people that don't understand the media space as such, it's here's the press release, but you can't go with it until a certain point in time. So what it basically does is it freezes all the journos. So you're basically at this point where you're like, well, I can't go chase the story now because I've already got the story. It's in my possession, but I know that none of my rivals are going to have it either because they're all on the embargo list. We get our stories ready and then we publish them at a later point in time. Whereas if you're not on the embargo list, essentially it's free reign. Like Tom down in Australia, for example, gets the chance to hear about it. And what would often happen in this particular scenario, to take people behind the scenes, is the people that are on the embargo list, they're all in their own private group chats. They're the authority that knows things that people don't. And so you think, oh, look, I'm not allowed to publish this to my organisation, but I might just put it in my group chat to let my mates know that there's this big news in Australian cricket happening or in English cricket happening, but you're not allowed to tell anyone about it. And then all of a sudden they're in a separate group chat where they say, hey, guys, don't spread this too widely, but you'll hear this happening later today. And then like the old game of telephone in the playground, that by the time it gets to the fourth or fifth group chat that it's out and someone else knows about it, makes its way into the hands of another journo, and all of a sudden the story gets reported. So I think it was a bit optimistic of English cricket to think that they were going to hold this for multiple hours or whatever it turned out to be.
Yeah, hearing the timeline, the only option really is to wait till the test is over before you tell Brendan McCullum news. Because as soon as you tell McCullum the news, it's news.
Yep, 100%. All right, did we miss an angle? Is there anything we haven't covered when it comes to the baseball era ending in test cricket?
Well, why don't we just leave it a bit open-ended and people can mail in any questions from here.
I like it. We'll get to some listener questions in just a moment. From one coach who is under a fair bit of pressure to another, and as England win 4-0, all of a sudden our attention turns to India. So India in their T20s over in the UK, or in and around Europe, they lost 0-2, of course, to Ireland, and now 0-4 against England. Interestingly, if you look at their catching display during that particular period of time, I saw a stat on Crick Info saying that only Ireland and Bangladesh are worse when it comes to full nation members for their catching efficiency, where India's sits at 72% at the moment. Is their pressure starting to build on GG? Gautam Gambhir is the coach of India, Teddy.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of playing out the previous discussion, but in real time. I think he's just got a few more dollars in the bank, or rupees in the bank, so to speak, because when you're the world champions, you don't look like losing, back-to-back world champions, and you don't look like losing in those big tournaments. These bilaterals, no one really cares about.
Yep.
No one even remembers. And so
over 1,600 days at number one in the world, they've lost that. Do we care or not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, sure, it goes into the watch list. Mm. And so if they lose their next 10 straight, then what? There's going to be some pressure for sure. But
one thing they certainly haven't done, though, that we thought they were going to after their wins down here in Australia is become this dominant force and take over world cricket. It's fair to say, even though they have won the last two T20 titles, they're not the 50-over champions. They haven't had this success in the Test arena where you think that this is overwhelming. No one's going to have any answers for India and a country of a billion people. They haven't been that force, have they, under Gambia?
No, they haven't. And one thing I know for sure is there's no shortage of talent, and that talent density is by far the greatest in the world. And they could field three teams, all with different coaches and different styles, and probably get three different outcomes, such is the quality of talent in the country. And so it does then become a question of how this particular team is coached, what's the culture of the team, how they're bringing players through, et cetera, et cetera. And so maybe when you put that under a microscope, it hasn't been to the success that it should have been. But it's pretty hard at this point in time to push the panic button.
The two nations are playing against each other in the, as I mentioned before, the first ever women's test match at Lord's. Heather Knight has retired from all forms of international cricket, so three cheers to her. Most capped women's cricketer of all time, a World Cup winning captain, played 15 test matches, 160 ODIs and 145 T20 international. She scored hundreds in all formats of the game for England. But it's going to be India who will win this test match. They need four more wickets, and essentially the victory target's 457, which is way off in the distance at the moment. England 6 for 130 in their second innings. Yastika Bhatia becomes the first female name onto the honour boards at Lord's. So scored 100 in the second innings. So well done to Yastika Bhatia. And Smriti Mandana, she was sensational in the match as well, but missed out on 100 in both innings, 83 in the first and 70 in the second dig. So big moment for women's cricket, Teddy.
Yeah, a big moment for women's cricket. And in the same week that Belinda Clark's portrait was unveiled in the long room as well. And of course, Belinda was involved in that great partnership with Lisa Kightley, who ended up being the first woman to score 100 at Lord's in an ODI. And I think they put it on 170 or so. So there is a rich history of, modern cricket, of women playing big matches at Lord's. But the test match, the women's test match, is coming back into vogue. And we can have the argument whether that's good or bad for women's cricket, maybe a separate time, but let's enjoy this moment. Two great cricket-playing nations playing a women's test at Lord's is something to be celebrated.
Just on India as well and their relations with us here in Australia, of course, the G'day Namaste initiative. I don't know if you saw this launched last week. Australia's push into India, so there's going to be a BBL game as part of the wider government initiative. So we knew about the BBL game.
How could I have missed this?
This was the story of the week.
Elbow and
Narendra Modi, of course, meeting in Melbourne last week. So the Renegades will play the Scorchers in Chennai December 12. It's going to start at 8:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is actually 2:40 local time. So it'll be in the middle of the afternoon. The venue holds 38,000. It's the end of the monsoon season, so the tournament organisers, Cricket Australia in this case, no reserve day, but are looking at options to try and extend the end of play to make sure that they can get a match in by hook or by crook. It will be after day four of the Perth Test match. So if it goes that far, New Zealand and Australia, and the Renegades will be technically the national home team. So they've got four other home games. That'll be spread across the Melbourne Cricket Ground and Junction Oval. So Marvel Stadium also is on the way out. So no more cricket at Dockland Stadium for the BBL.
How to wrap in nine separate topics into one little prelude. So
can we pick up whatever you like.
It's apart one by one. Well done. So the first one, I'm surprised. I know you're on offside as yourself. I'm surprised they didn't drag you into the next door studio and put you on insiders because a lot of the conversation was the Modi celebration at Marvel Stadium last week, where the big festival of Modi kind of kicked off, and then there was
Modi
the
Mania.
Press conference at the MCG with Steve Waugh. And cricket has always, well, not always, has played a huge role in diplomatic ties between the two countries. But I don't necessarily think the Big Bash going to India is one of them. I know there was some talk of an IPL game coming to Australia, and that's separate to the nine topics that you raised in those 30 seconds. But I don't think you know, the Renegades playing the Scorchers has anything to do with strengthening Indian-Australian diplomatic relations. It has to do about money. You were at the briefing that Cricket Australia ran. I'm curious as to who's funding this. Is there government funding or is it simply Cricket Australia?
I did ask that question in a briefing that I attended last week, and I think it's a little bit of everyone, but Cricket Australia are also putting in a fair few dollars for it.
It sounds like a dog and pony show for, you know, selling. There's no surprise that the two teams that have been mooted as being sold to IPL teams all of a sudden are turning up to play cricket in India.
That's a coincidence. We got told there's no link, apparently, between the two things. So Cricket Australia were keen to stress it. Just so happened that they're the two nations, the two franchises that are going.
Okay.
So it's just a coincidence.
Interesting. Okay, well, I'll take that back. Look, I think it's a – so zooming out, I don't mind the idea of a Big Bash game, whether it's in India or other parts of the world. It's natural for it to take to India. There's a ready-made cricket environment. It's not like the NRL going to Las Vegas, for instance. What's your bet on the crowd? You want to play overs, unders right now?
I'll take the unders. Yeah, so that
unders on what? You need a line.
Well, it's 38,000 is the capacity. So let's. What's a good crowd? If we come back and 20. Chat on the Monday,
20. Well, the equivalent is if it was played at Marvel last year.
Yep.
What kind of crowd are you getting?
Yeah, 15. Yeah.
Okay. So 15's the line.
You're still unders.
Yeah.
Nah, overs. They'll find a way to get people in there. They'll get more than 15,000 there. But I think I'd be shocked if it's got a 3 in front of it. It'd be low 2s, I reckon.
Okay. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So the second part of your 8-part question was, you just wrapped it up casually.
The Renegades, they're out of Marvel Stadium.
Hang on. They're playing two games at the Junction.
I know.
What is that?
Dream big.
Honestly,
community
the
ground.
Big Bash is better. So... There's a lot of different inputs here. So there are some nuances as to ground hire agreements, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of money's been spent at the Junction. But honestly, this tournament needs to dream bigger than a caretaker team playing at the Junction Oval. Yep. And so I don't know what – put as many temporary stands up as you can. I don't know what the capacity is. Let's call it 15,000. Mm. It is a – I personally thought that was a bit of a slap in the face. If you're a fan of the Renegades who's invested 10 years of trudging off to Docklands and all of a sudden it's like, hey, I know we've created this great product here. We're not going to take you to the MCG. We will for a couple of games. Or, you know, we've invested in Geelong. Mm. We're not going to do that anymore. You know, we're going to play two at the Junction.
Yeah. You know how people, when they sell their house, they like, you know, change the carpets and fix the cupboard that's always been broken and give it a lick of paint and it never looks better right before it goes to market? Whatever the opposite of that is, you know, whether walking through the house with your dirty shoes or whatever it turns out to be, drawing on the walls and everything else, that's what Cricket Victoria have done with this Renegades franchise on the way out. Like, they couldn't have done more to knock some of the value off it right before it goes to market.
Well, I don't think they've knocked value off the team formerly known as the Renegades, because I think they've already lined up a buyer and they've obviously lined up a price. This is me speculating. So this is not me talking any information.
If I'm taking it over, I'm thinking that's not what I signed up for or agreed to.
The team that's taking it over, said IPL team, again, they don't care. Because these teams are being marketed on a multiple of revenue, and automatically revenue is going to go down by playing games at the Junction Oval. So what it says, it actually devalues the other teams. And so it's self-interest again. We've got our buyer. We've got our price.
Kick rocks everyone else.
And so, you know, whatever happens is the rest is up to you. We're fine down here.
Yeah. What's the chance that when it's all said and done, even though they tell us nothing's happened yet, that the Renegades franchise is sold to an owner in any other country other than India?
No, none.
None. Yeah. It's zero. It's definitely, And an IPL team?
100. I would name your price.
Do you know what I still find staggering, right, is how did that meeting in mid-June – that everybody left that, which was meant to be the smoke the peace pipe, put the order of business, you know, the four points that we need to work through before the next step. How did everybody not leave that on exactly the same page? Like, I would have thought after all the kerfuffle and all the mess that had happened and everything else that it was shocking the way that it dragged out. I would have thought that is the moment that Cricket Australia grabs this entire process. You know what I want to say? It grabs hold of it and essentially says, this is what we're doing now. And yet less than 3 weeks later, we got reports in the media saying, oh, we think we can go and sell them and everything else. And it's back on. It's the states versus each other again. How does everyone not leave that crystal clear?
So I don't know, because I wasn't in the meeting, and I'm pretty hesitant to talk about meetings I wasn't in. So the things that are on my mind were two chairs weren't in that meeting. They sent representatives, and, you know, things get lost in translation perhaps. But I also think people then agree and then go back, and then there's, you know, the little influences behind the scenes as to what could happen. I think from all reports, it's all back to where we kind of started a little bit. There was a, so I don't know.
Are we waiting again? What are we doing?
I think we're waiting for those four things to happen. I think there was, from the leaked email that I saw, there was a little bit of uncertainty around the word pause and the nuances around what pausing processes mean and what can happen concurrently and you know, the nitty gritty around that.
We put a lot of stick on the players, but or I do, in terms of, you know, their role and everything else. But if I'm the ACA, I'd be sitting there thinking, you guys are kidding yourselves. Like, at the end of the day, until we sign an MOU, like, everything else can take a backseat. Like, I'd feel so disrespected in the whole thing by the states that essentially they've just, well, some states, I understand, not all of them, so they've just jumped ahead in the process and said, you know what, we're going to sort all this out, and but now we'll get to you and we'll work out an MOU down the track. You think, well, how can anything happen until that's sorted out?
Yeah, and not only that, aside from, you know, the IPL owners who don't really care because they're not doing it for a financial return, any financial buyer wants to know what the cost base is going to be. Yeah. And so cricket is just playing dumb if they think that people will want to bid on teams not knowing what their main cost of their business going forward is. So anyway.
Yeah, I've run out of time mainly because we had so much good stuff to get to today, and so I apologise for our listener emails, but the good news is we've got a backlog to do next week. So ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. The email address is in the show notes. Quick one here from Scott in Canada. Firstly, love the show, and I will be in Australia later in the year, hoping to catch a live show. Second, should we make...
Where are our live shows going to be?
I think there's four test match cities. I think three of them are looking positive. I hear that one of the cities might need to twist your arm a little bit to get it over the line.
Right. Maybe we need some government funding. We've already got
the whole thing's government funded. Second, should we make more of a new stat that selectors are talking about? Batters runs as a percentage of team total. Do you think this is a better indicator and it might catch on?
So selectors look at that all day, every day. If you go talk to George Bailey, and I know you two are now tight, and said, what's the most important thing, you know, of it when you're selecting team? He's not spitting averages and strike rates back at you.
I've heard Andrew McDonald's
looking at runs in different conditions. So that means whether it's proportionate to the team's total or other, you know, when you're comparing at different venues. So the depth of the analysis is well beyond, you know, what the broadcaster, you know, tends to put up on the screen as a batter walks out to bat.
Craig and Ivy in Melbourne, just want to get this one in too. Me and my 7-year-old daughter, Ivy, listen to the pod each week after Monday swimming lessons. As a long-suffering Essendon fan and a Melbourne Renegade fan too, of which Ivy has also inherited both, what advice do you have for a parent explaining to their child why we keep having our hearts broken by our red and black teams?
Who's the other red? Oh, the Renegades. The team formerly known as the Renegades. Well, the good news is, Ivy, the team that you formerly supported in the Renegades won't be red and black anymore. They're probably going to be blue and gold or bright yellow or some other exciting colour.
Bright yellow is a good start.
And so you'll only be left with the despair of supporting Essendon.
Yeah. And that's a tough gig. Ivy, you need to be in for the long run. But when it turns, Oh, it'll feel good when that day finally happens. Last one, Sean in WA. Everyone said T20 would be the death of Test cricket with the crowded schedule and after the retirements last month of Stokes and Williamson. Will Steve Smith be the last Test cricketer in history to reach 10,000 Test runs?
Look, if you're a betting person, I think that'd be a fair bet to make. What do you think?
Yep. I think that, that's probably fair. I'm just looking at the list now in front of me, which is the advantage I've got here. So, yeah, Kane Williamson fell 500 short, and then Virat Kohli 800 short. And then, yeah, there's no one in the vicinity that feels like they're going to bob up and get there anytime soon. So here we go. Mushfiqur Rahim, who plays for Bangladesh, he's on 6,806. So he's a minute away from getting there, and they don't play anywhere near the same amount of Test cricket.
Maybe the two Test series in Darwin, he can edge maybe.
Maybe. Looking forward to that. Exactly 1 month away today. So August 13th is when it all starts. I'll be up in Darwin for the first Test. So looking forward to that.
Just quickly on that, I don't know if you caught the content of Jake Weatherill doing the promo.
Yeah.
It was excellent. It was excellent content.
Do you reckon that means he's playing?
But I think we've found to answer the question you asked, like, what's the team going to look like? You can put in Jake Weatherill to the top.
You can get your chisel out and start carving that into stone. Teddy, good hit out. Appreciate your insights as always. I look forward to seeing the socials execution. Ed Cowan says, so can't wait to see what you've got for us there. And I appreciate your time as always here on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
Thanks, Corb. I've got a new webcam, so hopefully those socials are nice and crisp. Clear.